Rewiring Your Life with Erica Spiegelman and Marcia Stone. Wellness, inspiration, support.
Welcome everyone to Rewiring Your Life, where we have conversations on a weekly basis on wellness, inspiration, and support. My name is Marcia Stone, and I am co-hosting with Erica Spiegelman, the Rewiring Your Life podcast. Erica is not going to be with us today, but we have the amazing Lauren Duke that's going to join our show, and we are going to have a little conversation about Lauren, about her her life and her book and her beliefs and just every good thing. So welcome, everyone. And Lauren, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, welcome to the podcast. I'm so grateful that you would join me today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And we are a we. It's me and you, girl.
That's right.
There is a us.
That's right.
This is us.
We've got this. That's right. Lauren was saying to me like, oh, you have a Southern accent. And I was like, well, maybe a little tiny, tiny bit. And then Lauren was going to answer my question about where she lives and where she grew up. But I said, we better hold off on that. Let's save that so that the audience can hear as well. So tell us, Lauren, are you a California girl your whole life, or are you new to the area?
Oh, no, not new at all. Born and raised. And interesting enough is anyone who's from California, especially coastal California, will really enjoy reading the book. I'm not sure. Can we say the name?
Yes, absolutely. Say whatever you want.
Okay, Shithouse. Sorry, I just came off the news and the radio where we actually couldn't even say it. And I was like, what are we even doing here right now?
You need Howard Stern to interview you.
That's right. Oh, man, I love Howard Stern.
No.
This is going to be a better conversation.
Absolutely.
Than the one with Howard Stern. But,
absolutely.
But yeah, anyone who has picked up the book will really appreciate all the California landmarks, the coastal landmarks in it, because there's a lot of that, considering I kind of grew up in Northern California coastal, a little town called Pacifica, California, specifically in a place called Pedro Point. Ah. So anyone from the Bay Area knows all about Pedro Point because it's a surf spot and kind of definitely up and coming real estate for all the tech boom,
right?
You know, tech people that
right.
are, popping up in the city. And then now I currently live between two places. One is Encinitas, California, which is where I'm at right now. That's why I was saying I can almost see the ocean. So that's coastal. I know it's so amazing. and then the other place, so my business, Gather Encinitas, the community center, mental health platform, and education model, that's here in Encinitas. And then my kind of writing hub is in Ojai. And so I mostly am living in Ojai these days full time, starting kind of pre-pandemic.
Right, right. Well, so let's jump right in. Since you said the word, I was going to ask you, is the name of your book Shithouse? Like, what is this about? Tell me, I have to know. How did you come up with this? What's the meaning? Is this a metaphor? What are we doing here, Lauren?
Yeah, it is actually, but it's real. Mm. It is a metaphor, and also it's a real landmark. When I was 14, my father had been in prison for 8 years for robbing a bank. Mm. And when he got out of prison, I, hadn't had any parental influences really around. My mom was a single mom and she was out working and I was out in the world getting in trouble, trying to find my way and doing things in all the wrong way because I right. wasn't getting what I needed at home. And so my mom was kind of fed up and sick of me. So she kind of went and moved in with her boyfriend. And so when my dad got out of prison, she let him live in my basement. And this is someone I hadn't seen in 8 years. Sure, we talked, but he was like fresh off the press, the convict press. And he called the basement the shit house. And the reason he called it the shit house is because when we walked down into the basement after he had just come from prison, and we went down there for the first time, it was covered in spider webs and, dingy, dusty, moldy. And he's like, why haven't you guys been taking care of this down here? And I said, what do you expect from us? You know, this is how we live. Did you expect something different? Come on, you know where we come from. And And he said, well, this is a shit house. And if you don't take care of things, there's all sorts of stuff hiding in the dark. And so that ended up becoming a big, you know, metaphor for the book. And at some point we all live in a shit house. So that's true. The other piece of it.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit more. I read the synopsis of your book, and I can't wait to read the whole thing, by the way, because you have such an interesting and profound story. But can you just share with the listeners a little bit about, you know, what was happening in your childhood that kind of put you on the path that you are now, where you're really focused on healing and all those good things. But, you know, what was going on back then that caused you so much pain, Lauren?
Yeah, well, you know, I had some messy caregivers who didn't know how to attune to their children because they had their own unresolved trauma. And they weren't taking care of themselves, and they were in survival mode. So that was something they ended up passing on to their kids. I mean, that's the generational trauma piece, and they didn't even realize they were doing it, you know. And so when I was a kid, you know, my mom was an alcoholic. My dad was a heroin addict and an alcoholic. He ended up going to prison. My mom married another guy. That guy was an alcoholic. 9 DUIs. We got in a drunk driving accident with him. I was stealing liquor bottles with him from the liquor store and protecting them because already my father was in prison. I had other family members in prison, and, you know, I ended up protecting a lot of their behaviors because, well, one, it was normal and I didn't know how else to act. And also that's a survival, you know, that's a survival technique. And I was only a kid and I didn't want my caregivers to go away. So I was going to do whatever I could do to protect them. But ultimately, in the long term, that ended up being something that was really toxic for me because I mistook that behavior as who I was.
Right, right. And I would, you know, guess that in some respects, you felt like you had some inherent value when, you know, you were either covering for them or, you know, helping them to steal or, you know, being the distraction, whatever, because I would assume that they praised you and, you know, thanked you and, you know, what a good girl you are and all those kind of things. So, you know, how much of your value do you think you, you know, sort of accidentally or maybe not accidentally placed on that feedback that you were getting?
Yeah, that's so interesting because no one thanked me. You know, no one, it was like, it was just, it was expected. You know, it was implied that this is what you're going to do. And, you know, I'm coming from baby boomer parents, and what's their special skill? Sweeping everything under the rug. So it's not like we ever talked about the things that were going on. When you're in survival mode, you're not talking about the things that are going on. You're just trying to get through the day and like not die and not go to jail, you know? So, I don't even know that I don't think that these people even had their own awareness of their actions. Like my stepdad, I think he was just also, you know, doing what felt normal or doing, he was an addict, and his biology and physiology depended on alcohol at that point to survive. And so, he never asked me to cover for him. No one ever asked me to cover for them. It's just what you do. And then again, you mistake that, all those actions, for who you actually are. And I think ultimately in the long run, this is why I ended up, you know, writing the book, because all the things that happened to me at some point in my kind of, you know, around 27, I ended up pretty much having a meltdown. I got a PTSD diagnosis, and I really didn't understand it. But, that ended up being kind of the inquiry for the book, is trying to understand what was happening inside of me. And, you know, through that process, I recognized like, oh my God, I'm so full of all the things that happened that were unresolved that it's really affecting my mental health and my nervous system.
Yeah. 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 So, you know, in recovery jargon, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, what things were like, what happened, and what things are like now. So, you know, in that framework, if you were to define sort of a catalyst that, you know, was your wake-up call to, you know, begin to look at your past through a different lens and, you know, almost, you know, take a right turn towards some kind of healing and recovery, you know, what happened? Was there you said you had a meltdown, and maybe you could share a little bit about that, because I think some people just wonder, like, how do I get out of this? You know, what's going to have to happen for me to desire to change?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, at some point I didn't even think that I deserved to get out of it. Like, I just didn't know any other way, you know? And so when I found, so basically in high school, I took a yoga class. I'm going to tie all this stuff together, because it's a puzzle. It's a riddle. But I took a yoga class, and, I was like the delinquent of that class, but I realized, through that class, even though I couldn't articulate it at the time, that there was something about what we were doing, whether it was the breathing, whether it was the imagery, whether it was the movement, that made me have at least one moment of peace, which is when you're in survival mode and you're wired for chaos, that is rare. And so there was a curiosity that came out of, you know, a yoga class for me. And so by the time I was 18, I followed that again. I kept kind of taking yoga classes again, even though I had no idea what any of it was, what it meant. It was just like some magic thing that I felt like it was some magic thing that was, you know, descending from the cosmos onto me. Like, it felt like some magical, mystical experience. And which is interesting, because now that I know so much about neurophysiology, I recognize that's actually not what it is at all.
Right.
But at the time, you know, it was like something that saved me, even though it was momentary. And so I kept following the thread of yoga, But by the time I was 27, like, yoga was my temporary fix. Yoga was what was kind of getting me through my 20s. Without totally losing my mind.
Right.
And by the time I was 27, I was having really bad PTSD symptoms. And I just thought, I was so ashamed of it, because at this point, I was actually a yoga teacher.
Right.
And so I took my first training when I was 19. I kept following the thread of that. But by the time I was 27, I had been feeling all of these symptoms, but then I wasn't really telling anyone or doing anything about it, because I felt like, I felt really ashamed. You know, I felt like I was going insane, and I didn't really feel like I could share that with people, because I was also a yoga teacher, and it seemed contradictory, you know, or like I was a hypocrite or I was a fake. And that's like, you know, in our culture, it's not okay to be a fake, even though in some ways we're all faking it, you know, to some extent, for sure. Anyway, I got to a point where I couldn't live my life. I couldn't drive a car. I couldn't be in big groups of people. I couldn't tolerate loud noises, bright lights, and I was really sick. I had a lot of physical symptoms. I had irritable bowel syndrome, hemorrhoids. I mean, everything you can think of, because like a whole host of issues, because my history was living inside of me unresolved, and I hadn't made sense of it. I hadn't organized it, and I needed some help. And so out of almost necessity, I just started writing. I just started to put my story on the page. And every time I, you know, wrote a story or investigated a piece of my past, I found something else. And, you know, through that process as well, I started therapy, because as I was investigating my life, I really got to look kind of up close and personal at some of the things that I had been through. And, recognize like, oh my God, I can't do this alone. You know, I'm in so much pain. I don't understand this. I need support. And so I sought out support. I was going to, you know, a trauma therapist, and also simultaneously writing my story. And, you know, through therapy and through writing my story and through taking a look at all the characters in my life who were also my family members, and, you know, through the close-up investigation of them and also zooming out examinations of them, I recognized that they also were people who had gone through similar experiences as me, but also hadn't healed it and basically passed it on to me. And so that was my big wake-up call, was through the book writing process, I recognized that my family members were also human beings. They also had a lot of unresolved trauma. And I was able to forgive them. You know, that was kind of my portal into compassion and forgiveness. And that's when I recognized, like, oh my God, I have to keep going with this book. I have to publish this, because so many people feel like this about their own family members. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was really
And don't have the words to express.
No, and don't understand, like, for me now, I have spent the last 10 years educating myself on what trauma is, educating myself on how the nervous system functions, and really been able to kind of deconstruct and codify, you know, what happens to a body when a traumatic event occurs and how that ends up playing out in your nervous system and your relationships. And so I can understand how it's so scary for people, but my job, like my vision and is to be able to help break that down for people. Like, this is what your body is doing. It is protecting you. And also we're resilient, you know, you can rewire that, but it does take some work for sure.
Oh, I love that you said rewire. That's one of my favorite words. So
yeah,
Lauren,
well,
it sounds like, right. It's true. It's absolutely doable. And, you know, I think most people should, frankly, do it in one way or another. So your book really started off, it sounds like, more of journaling. And then the more awareness you had about yourself and the more information you were starting to gather about other people's experiences, it sounds like, I hate to say this because I know it was a lot of hard work, but it sounds like the book almost wrote itself.
Well, it definitely didn't start off as a journal writing process because I had the intention. Like, I was like, nope, I'm going to write a memoir. I'm going to do this. I went to journalism school. Yeah, it was, I just started writing. Like, there's a Maya Angelou quote and it says something like, there's no greater burden than bearing an untold story inside of you. Mm. And that's also what was making me sick.
That.
I was like, I know, I need to put this on paper. I need to get this down. This is important. Like, I just knew, like, it was like my soul's work. My destiny was to write this book and get it out into the world and turn this message into a movement, you know? But wait, what was the second piece of that question?
Yeah. Oh gosh. Don't ask me hard questions.
Okay.
Lauren.
No, I'm not going to keep going. We're in the flow, sister. Let's go.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I was saying, I don't want to get off on this tangent, but I had COVID a few weeks ago and I was saying to Caitlin, our engineer, before we started, I feel like my memory is impacted in some ways and just hoping that that's going to get better. But anyway, when you were speaking, I was thinking about, you know, this word or this phrase, intergenerational trauma. And, you know, just briefly, like a little snapshot of my own story, you know, I got into recovery and, you know, am still in recovery for alcoholism. And so, you know, when I was first starting to get help, the therapist and, you know, doctors, et cetera, that were doing the assessments would say, you know, is there alcoholism in your family? And I would always answer no, because my awareness growing up was that, you know, everything was fine. Uncle so-and-so didn't show up for the family dinner because he's selfish and he doesn't care about us. Or, you know, Uncle so-and-so, you know, passed away at 42 years old because, you know, unknown causes, when actually, you know, he drank himself to death. And so it's interesting, like, as I started to get better and started to really, you know, look through a different lens at my past and my family's past and sort of, you know, family lore, et cetera, what I found out was that alcoholism had ravaged my family for generations. Trauma was all over the place in, you know, my family map. And to really begin to understand all that and to integrate it into, you know, who I thought I was, it sounds way simpler than it actually was, because it was messy and it was complicated and it took time and all those kind of things. But, you know, when I look back on that, and one of the things when I do speaking, et cetera, talking about my recovery, I always say, you know, I have three children now that are in their mid-20s and early 30s, and they're all in recovery. And the greatest blessing that I think I could ever realize about myself and about their experience is, because I was vocal, because I was, you know, so out loud about my struggles, my children had the language and had the information to ask for help literally decades before I did in my own recovery story. And I think that you're onto something here, Lauren, because the truth is, if we are able to identify and recognize what's going on, you know, and you know, connect that with our family and our own history, we're just, you know, head and shoulders above where we would have been if we just kept quiet. You know, does that resonate with you?
Yeah, and I, oh my gosh, so much. And you know, I love this idea of family lore. That would be such a good book, or like such a good series, huh? Family lore, because we all have it. And I think that for so long, at least until, you know, the millennial, I just turned 39. So I'm a older on the later spectrum of the millennials, but like our parents just basically taught us to keep it quiet. And when you keep things quiet, when you keep things a secret, you're literally living in your own prison. Like that is what is making us sick. And that was what was making me sick, you know, and people don't realize that, like I grew up with this, adage that was so normalized, which is like, you know, this is just how I was born, or this is just how you were born, or this is just how your dad was born. Right. And that's bullshit, because it's just not true. You know, intergenerational trauma, transgenerational trauma, it seems like this big, scary word, you know, that we, and there is a piece of it that's genetics. I mean, that's the whole epigenetic, you know, piece. But now they're saying that 80% of who we become as human beings is actually learned. It's environment. You know, it's the nature versus nurture conversation. Like 80% of who we are is nurture, and 20% is biology. 20% is genetics. And that means that everything that we've been through is shaping us. The good news is that also means that everything we continue to do for us can continue to change and evolve the programs on our genes. That is why this conversation is so important, because we don't need to be who our family was. We don't need to be like repeat the same patterns. You know, they say like history repeats itself. Until you wake up, until you have awareness, you know, until you recognize like, oh my gosh, this is, I mean, and this is, that was the piece of writing this book, is like, I just wanted other people to recognize like how impacted we are by our histories, how impacted we are by, you know, the narrative and actions of our family members, and that we don't need to be like that. We could be better. And if you didn't, if you had an amazing childhood and like your parents are your heroes, fucking great. That's amazing. I'm stoked for you, you know, but I would say a lot of people kind of went through what we went through, and, you know, and there was a lot of secrets, and we just got to stop that. Like the secrets are a cesspool, you know, they make us sick. Yeah. Secrets make us sick.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I could not agree with you more. And the burden of not being your authentic self, the burden of that is so enormous, especially these days in the world of, you know, internet, social media, et cetera. It's kind of like either you accept your past and you're honest about your past and you integrate it into your future, or someone's going to out you for it. Right. And I think, you know what I mean?
I mean, we are in the middle of cancel culture. Come on. Like this is it. We think that it's all over the place. It's rampant. This, you're going to get called out.
Oh yeah, for
you're
sure.
You're going to feel like shit about it, because it's like being rejected from the tribe.
Right. Exactly. I remember early in my recovery, I don't even remember why this happened, but I was invited to go down to the Capitol in Texas, in Austin, Texas, and speak on the steps of the Capitol about recovery. And when I started speaking, I just said it. I just said the truth. Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming. My name is Marcia Stone, and I'm an alcoholic and a woman in long-term recovery. And you could almost hear a gasp, right? But at that moment in time, I just thought, I'm not going to lie anymore. I'm not going to hide anymore.
No.
This is who I am, and it's okay, you know? And, you know, this is going to be a part of me for the rest of my life, whether I say it is or not. It doesn't mean, you know, just because we don't say it, just because we sweep under the rug, doesn't make it untrue or not have happened, right? And I think that's the big
piece. No, and
it doesn't
help us.
Right, or anyone else that might be listening, you know?
No. Right. No. And, you know, there's a quote, it was like a president, it's a long, long, a million years ago, but it's something like, the further back you look, the farther forward you can see.
Right.
And I know for me, when I really kind of extracted the cosmology of my own origin and my own history, I made so much sense and my behaviors made so much sense in the context of where I came from that it was so easy to forgive myself for some of the things that I had done, because that was part of also what was making me sick, is I had done so many things that were just kind of inevitable for me. You know, it was inevitable for me to just, you know, get into drugs and sex addiction and, you know, looking for attention in all the places that I wasn't getting from my caregivers.
Right.
And when I could really like take a deep, hard, long look at my life, at my parents' life, like I was like, oh my God, it's just, this isn't my fault. And when, and these behaviors and patterns and belief systems are not mine. These came from, and this is the big generational trauma piece. I mean, everyone is living with generational trauma to some extent, and it really is limiting people's lives because, you know, part of the generational trauma is these really limiting belief systems and, you know, believing, like for me, because everyone was an addict, it was like, well, I'm an addict, you know, but
right. Anyway, seems inevitable.
It like made so much sense, but in the context of, you know, all of my family's actions, all of my own actions, it was like, it was just really easy to let myself off the hook versus, you know, continue to live with that shame. And when I realized like, oh my God, everything I've learned is just someone else's ideas that they learned from someone else. I have this realization, like, this is not even mine. Where did this even come from? Like this is, and I could kind of follow the thread of it and see where it came from. But what I realized is, this is not mine to hold. This is not mine to live. And I'm not going to live like this anymore. Guess what?
You know,
I'm not.
One of the sayings that I always heard growing up is, you know, you made your bed, you're going to have to lay in it, right? And I always say about recovery that, you know, recovery is to look that statement in the face and say, that's bullshit. And I'm not going to lay here. And I'm going to get up and I'm going to be free. You know, because that's the thing, you know, that the freedom that comes with, you know, reconciling all the parts of you. And also for me, I don't, you know, want to put this on you, but for me, it also made it easier for me to forgive my caregivers because I realized, you know, they weren't doing it at me. They weren't being neglectful at me, or they weren't, you know, you know, talking shamefully at me, right? They learned it somewhere, and the people that did it them learned it somewhere back. And, you know, I don't know what the future is.
You
know what I mean? Right? I mean, where did it begin? So Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. And that was kind of the, you know, last piece, the last quarter of my book is all about that, where I'm just like, oh my God, I can't even be mad at these people anymore. And that really healed my relationships. Like I have such a sweet relationship with my mom now, even though we don't like talk about anything really. I mean, even the book, like it's like there is no conversation with, but
you're not going to get flowers later or anything.
No. And no one's even going to talk about it.
Okay.
Like I was just at Christmas and literally no one spoke about my book.
Right.
You know, no one. And, but that's just like, okay, now that I realize where that comes from, I'm not a victim of it. I'm not a victim of my circumstances, but I'm also not mad at them because this is them just living their very kind of small, limited mentality. And I'm so glad that I've learned the things that I've learned because it makes me not live like that. And, you know, but it also makes me able to forgive them and meet my family members where they're at rather than, because this is where I think everyone goes wrong. It's like, we're so biologically selfish. Like we all just want to be acknowledged. We all just want, you know, everyone to like, you're amazing. I love you. You know, acknowledge us, basically confirm our existence in the world. And so we don't meet people where we're at. We keep wanting people to meet us where we're at. And then we get mad when people don't do that. But people are only working with the tools that they're working with. And that was my revelation through the book. And that was why so deeply I realized I wanted to share it and that I needed to publish it because I can't tell you how many people I know. I mean, almost everyone I know is like pissed off at their family members or someone for some reason. But really, if you look at that person in the context of their history and everything they've been through and everything they have not processed, like it makes sense they would act like that. And then you can lead from a place of compassion and forgiveness rather than anger.
Right, right. You can watch it without involving yourself in it.
Witness it, yeah.
So Lauren, okay, so you've written this amazing book. Congratulations, first of all. That's major. I mean, I wish I could give you a hug right now. That's so major. Congratulations on that. How do you feel? Like, how do you feel today? Do you feel like excited or scared or what's going on within you?
I feel to a certain extent, I feel relieved, you know, because this for me was a 7-year process and I was, you know, obsessed. Like this became, you know, my life basically. And so there's a piece of me that's like, I kind of feel like someone sent me a text message. Do you feel like it's your birthday? I'm like, no, I don't feel like it's my birthday. I feel like I am a mom with, a kindergartner and I'm walking my kindergartner to the door and my kindergartner is walking away and kind of looking back at me. And I'm like, oh shit, I hope my kid does not get its ass kicked out. You know, and like setting, like,
I love that analogy like, though. That's so good
in the world and, you know, a little bit nervous and also recognizing like my kid's just going to go be,
you want everyone to be nice
but
to
like,
him.
You can't control any of that. So I mean, all artists feel like this. We're so, you know, we're pumped and excited and in love with what we've created. And also we're having to set it free and let go of our attachment to, you know, the circumstances and the outcome. Because who knows, you know, like I went through an indie press. My book is the biggest book to ever come out of that press house. And so that's awesome. I've had a ton of support. People love it, but you just never know until you really put it in the world. And no matter what, some people are not going to like it. It's going to get annihilated. And that's just true. That's what you deal with.
Yeah.
If you're going to write a book, like if you want to put yourself out there, you're going to get fucked with for it. And I'm, you know what? I've been getting fucked with my whole life. So I'm here for it. I'm good.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. I'm here for it. Yep. I'm good. Okay, so you write your book, and are you still teaching yoga? And you know what's going on with you now, and what does the future hold?
So I am teaching yoga. I still own my mental health platform, which also is a yoga studio, and I use my yoga classes now as a way to educate people on how their nervous systems work, because what trauma really is, oftentimes people, when they think about trauma, they think about, a specific event, like a really big event or something, but it's really not that. That's a traumatic event. What trauma is in reference to the way that your body and mind reorganize itself to basically protect you from that thing ever happening again. So it's a full reorganization of your nervous system. So trauma is actually nervous system dysfunction. And so I teach people how to basically regulate their own nervous system, because trauma is an unregulated nervous system. And I realize that's pretty much what everyone is struggling with, is unregulated and nervous system dysfunction. And so, I really used yoga. Yoga is such an easy portal. Like if I was like, I have a certain training called somatic experiencing, and it's a 3-year training, and it helps. It's a trauma resolution technique that, you know, helps work with people's nervous system dysfunction and resolve nervous system dysfunction in a body. And, if I ever said like, come to my somatic experiencing class, people would be like, no. But it's easy for me to say, hey, come to my yoga class, because everyone does yoga now. And then I just secretly sneak in there how a body works. And when you understand how your body works, you have an awareness of how your body works, you can regulate your state. You can take yourself up, you can take yourself down. You have an awareness of your, you know, the inner landscape, your introspection, your feelings, the sensations in the body. And you can work with all that. When you feel yourself go up, it's like, oh, I know what my body's doing right now. It's on high alert. Okay. Now, this is what I have been taught to do to kind of resolve that and soothe myself. And this is what we were not taught in primary education, which I think should have been like first grade 101, how your body works. Like that, we should have been taking that class every year. You know, like.
Right. Because no one talks about it. Right.
Yes, exactly. And so, so I'm still teaching yoga. I still have the mental health platform, and I'm doing a lot of writing workshops and, you know, helping other people get their stories out there and helping be a tool and resource. I have a lot of editors and writers, authors, book doctors that I've been working with, kind of like co-hosting things for other people to help them tell their story as a kind of right to heal catharsis. And then my primary kind of mission is to be a nervous system educator and share with people this piece of information that people really don't have, that everyone should really have. It's pretty basic. You know, this is how to take care of your system. And through all my education, I am hoping that that's kind of my next book, is some piece of prescriptive nonfiction about all the different nervous system responses, particularly freeze response.
Yeah. Yeah. We've always heard flight or fright.
Yeah. Fight or
freeze.
Flight.
Exactly.
Yeah. And freeze is the other piece. Like mostly everyone kind of traditionally people are like fight, flight, but there's this whole other piece that's happening to people in our society and people don't really understand what it is, but it is the freeze response and there's a way out of that. And so my goal is to basically make all of this information really like normalize it, normalize the conversation around trauma, normalize the conversation around what it does to your mind, body, system, and then help educate people, kind of be that person who's at the head of that movement to educate people on how to resolve that and move on with your life. So you're not so limited.
Right. You don't have to stay stuck.
Because your life gets very contracted. No, exactly. Your life gets very small. Like when I was really struggling with all those PTSD symptoms, my life became very small. I couldn't really travel. I couldn't get on a plane. I couldn't get in a car. I couldn't be around other people with chaotic nervous systems. Like I was on high alert all the time. And that is how people are living. And that is what I want to help people with.
Right. Because that's the sickness. That's exactly what it is. Well, Lauren, I think that you're amazing. Like I said, I can't wait to read your book. And again, just congratulations on everything that you've done and everything that you're going to be doing. So for our listeners who want to, connect with you, DM you, follow you, where can our listeners find Lauren Duke?
Yeah. So my website, one of the things I do want to say is on Thursday, January 20th from 5 to 7 p.m., I'm going to do a book launch and kind of live reading via Zoom. And people can go to my website, which is laurendollyduke.com. And Dolly is D-O-L-L-I-E. And they can register for that. I'm pretty active on Instagram. That seems to be like a pretty good platform for me. And that is DollyDuke83, D-O-L-L-I-E-D-U-K-E 83, because that's my name, Lauren Dolly Duke.
and people
can just DM me wherever. I literally like respond to everyone because, I know you get sometimes authors and public figures get so big that they just like stop responding to people. And I've had that happen to me, several times, like asking people for insight, other authors for insight, and they just don't even respond.
Yeah.
But I'm still at the juncture of my life where I'm still responding. So if you have questions, like I want to help educate people. So please reach out.
Awesome. And I followed you on Instagram this morning and you are so pretty and so talented and it just comes shining through. So tell me this, we're almost out of time. Is there something that I haven't asked you or that we haven't talked about yet that you feel that this interview would be incomplete if we didn't mention it?
I think we've covered quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we're good.
Awesome.
I think we just had an amazing conversation.
No, me too. And thank you again for being here. And I can't wait to follow your path. I mean, you're obviously doing things that are meaningful and impactful. And I love that. I love that about you. I love that for you and for the people that you're going to be helping. So all good things.
Thank you. And thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So we ask our guest one final question, Eric and I do when we do these together. And it's our deep dive question. And are you open to that? Are you open to a deep dive question?
Oh my God. I'm here for it,
okay.
Sister.
Let's do it. So tell me, Lauren Duke, what is your superpower?
Ooh, yeah. My superpower is being a community connector.
Wow, I love that.
That really is. I don't even need to think about that. That is my superpower. If someone reaches out to me or needs something, I know exactly. I know so many people and I'm connected to so many people that I am constantly putting people in the right place. Like, because it is, you know, we live in a social matrix and I couldn't have done this journey on my own and I needed resources. And now that's basically like what I am. I'm like the place to find the tools and resources. Like I might not necessarily have them, but I know exactly where to put you.
Oh, that's so good.
It's and like, who to put you in touch with.
It's like the Lauren Dewey Decimal System for information, right?
Basically, yeah. I'm like the World Wide Web here.
I love that. I love that. Well, thank you again, Lauren. And I look forward to staying in touch. And again, just thank you for being here. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us as well on Rewiring Your Life. I'm Marcia Stone, and I co-host this wonderful podcast with Erica Spiegelman, and we will look forward to seeing you all next week. Be well.